Hey, it's Cappy, and this is Beyond the Plate, Her, the audio newsletter where I share what's on my plate, literally and figuratively. From culinary insights to restaurants and recipes, it's everything I'm seeing, tasting, and talking about in just a few minutes. This isn't a peer-reviewed culinary journal. It's just my take on what I'm into at the moment. So let's dive in, and I hope you all take something from my plate. All right, first up is Sonny's Steakhouse in Miami. Sonny's is in the Little River area of Miami. And if you're not familiar with that area, think up in like the 60s, 70s, 80th Street area. And while it's labeled a steakhouse, being from Chicago and all, I'd say this is not your big old school typical white tablecloth style steakhouse. No shade at all. It's just not a Chicago or New York style steakhouse to me. That's it. That said, there is a strong meat program here, but there's also great seafood, delicious pastas, and a bunch of other things. And I first heard about Sonny's from a Beyond the Drink guest, Will Thompson, who's a partner at Sonny's and heads up their beverage program. Will has made a tremendous name for himself in South Florida. And if you're into cocktails, especially martinis, do not sleep on their martini program. The kitchen is run by executive chef Aaron Brooks, and we had a number of really great dishes. We had a beef tartare, a homemade agnolotti pasta with corn, blue crab, and saffron that everybody talks about, an incredible homemade sausage dish. But the menu changes often, I believe. So it's a really good looking menu and you're probably in good hands with whatever you choose. It's that type of restaurant. Truth be told, I actually went solo to Sonny's to sit at the bar because I heard you could only eat their burger at the bar. But I ran into friend of the pod, Chef Ken Oringer from Boston, and ended up joining his group. And I'm very glad I did because it turned into one of those meals where you try a lot of the menu. So shout out to Sonny's. I've been hearing great things for well over a year now, and I'm really glad I finally made it. And last thing, I have to mention The Space. It's one of the coolest restaurant venues I've been to in a long time. It's kind of outdoors, but some parts are indoors, and there are actual trees like growing and running through the restaurant. It's really beautiful. And another fun fact, Sonny's started as a pandemic pop-up, and now it's probably one of the hardest places to get into in Miami. So if you can get in, highly recommend Sonny's Steakhouse in Miami. You can find all the links and handles I mentioned in the show notes. Next up is the Ninja Creamy. Okay, I have very quickly become obsessed with this thing. Literally, as I'm recording this, a friend of mine is texting me about the Ninja Creamy. That's very funny. Okay, I digress. This was actually a Christmas gift from my mother-in-law, and full disclosure, it sat in the box for a few months before I finally wound up breaking it out. And I'm very glad I did. Long story short, the Creamy basically takes any frozen base, ice cream base, yogurt, fruit, whatever, and it spins it into this super smooth, scoopable ice cream or sorbet. There's a slushy function, a milkshake function, whatever you're going for. My kids and I have already made a cookies and cream ice cream. We did a delicious watermelon sorbet, a watermelon slushy, a pina colada ice cream, mango sorbet. I feel like we're just getting started here and summer is going to be a blast. And for the food geeks out there, there's actually a really cool backstory here that I like to share, and it goes like this. So back in the late 80s, a Swiss engineer developed a machine called the Paco Jet, which a lot of high-end kitchens use. If you've ever worked in a nice kitchen, you are probably familiar with the Paco Jet. It basically uses this drill-like technology to take a completely frozen block of something and turn it into an incredibly smooth texture, ice creams, sorbets, purees. And it does this a la minute, no stabilizers. For those who don't know, a la minute is a fancy French culinary term, which means in a minute or to the minute, usually referring to dishes that are prepared or cooked and served like immediately upon ordering rather than cooked in advance. So it basically takes a frozen base and turns it into an ice cream right away. But here's the catch. The PacoJet costs like $6,500 or more, and it's not exactly a home kitchen appliance. But the patents expired around 2017, which essentially opened the door for companies like Ninja to jump in. So they launched the Creamy in 2021, and it's essentially bringing the same idea that the PacoJet had into a much more accessible, user-friendly home cook format, if you will. It's not like an exact one-to-one with the PacoJet, but it's really close. And I just feel it's a super cool story and an awesome product. And especially heading into the summer, as I mentioned, highly recommend a Ninja Creamy. I'm going to share a very cool YouTube video that a guy named Chris Young made about the Ninja Creamy, comparing it to the PacoJet. He makes these awesome videos about the science of cooking. So I'll share a link to that video in the show notes. Next up is my salty chocolate and tahini granola. I've definitely talked about granola multiple times at this point on the podcast, but I just enjoy messing around with it and coming up with new flavor combos. So recently I wanted to figure out a way to incorporate tahini into my granola. And after a little playing around in the kitchen, I landed on a salty chocolate tahini version that I've now made a few times. Granola is great because once you have a solid base recipe, you can kind of do whatever you want with it and add different mix-ins and whatnot. This one starts pretty standard. I use oats and pistachios or almonds or both. And then I mix in this liquid mixture of honey, maple syrup, and tahini, which kind of enhances the base and makes it all stick together. But the fun part of this one is at the end, right when it comes out of the oven from being baked for a little bit, I sprinkle some mini chocolate chips over the top just so they melt enough to stick to the granola. And then I put a very light dusting of flaky sea salt and a little bit of fresh lemon zest. And I happen to have some of Mollier's cinnamon, cardamom, and ginger sprinkles, which were also delicious over the top. I have made this flavor combo a handful of times now, and I give it to random people who I think will appreciate it. And so far, it's been a hit. So this one will be staying in the rotation for a little while. I will include the recipe that I went to buy in the show notes. Next up is Chefs on the Spectrum. Okay, Chefs on the Spectrum is a new program designed to place autistic individuals into restaurant kitchens. I recently learned about it through some incredibly generous chefs I follow on social media and friends of the podcast. And what an incredibly meaningful program that this is. So the program officially launched recently from what I saw at the Autism Speaks Gala in New York City. And it's led by Chef Franklin Becker in partnership with Autism Speaks. The idea seems pretty straightforward, but really powerful. It's designed to train and place autistic individuals into fine dining, high pressure restaurant environments, helping to create real career opportunities for these individuals while also addressing the ongoing labor gap in restaurants. It's not just about placement though, it's more, it's mentorship, support, building a pathway for people who may have faced barriers getting into these kitchens in the first place. So I also want to shout out a company called Kitara Pastoria, which is based in Cambridge, Massachusetts, where most of their employees are on the autism spectrum. I actually found them through a post from Chef Ken Oringer, so double shout out to Ken in this episode. And I ordered one of their pasta kits, which was delicious. So big props to Chef Franklin Becker and his network of chefs for stepping up and creating real opportunities in their kitchens. Next up, a new cookbook coming out this October from Chef Eric Repair called Mindful Cooking, Simple Recipes for Nurturing Body and Soul. I am excited about this one. Okay, full disclosure, this book is not out for a couple months, but I'll just say this. If you're even thinking about it, which you should be, go pre-order it because pre-orders actually matter a lot in the book world. In anything Eric Repair does, I usually pay attention to. He's one of the most respected chefs in the country. Well, globally. And of course, if you're not familiar, you should be. He's the chef and co-owner of Le Bernardin Restaurant, which is one of the world's best restaurants. Eric's been a huge voice around mindfulness in the kitchen, blending his discipline, technique, and a real sense of calm that's pretty rare at his level. And also happens to be one of my favorite Beyond the Plate episodes from way back in season one. So again, really excited to get my hands on this one and see what Eric has been working on. One last thing before I leave you. It's Chinese sweet and sour sauce meets vinaigrette dressing. Hear me out. I feel like Chinese chicken salad dressing has been around for quite a while. It's a go-to at a lot of restaurants, and I get it. I like it a lot. And side note, Jones on 3rd in LA, their Chinese chicken salad is fantastic. But recently I had a little epiphany. So I was at the bottom of the bottle of Heinz ketchup, and maybe like a tablespoon left, tablespoon or two. And I kind of took a page of something Rachel Ray does a lot. She calls it the bottom of the jar recipes. And it's using the bottom of whatever is in a jar to make something new, a new recipe. So I added about 1 ounce of red wine vinegar, 1 ounce of olive oil, a little squeeze of honey, and a pinch of salt. And I shook all of that up right in the ketchup bottle. And it made this really delicious dressing that reminded me of sweet and sour sauce that you get in a Chinese restaurant on sweet and sour chicken or something like that. I used it on a salad. It would probably be great on a spinach salad, awesome on shredded cabbage for kind of a sweet and sour slaw, or even roasted vegetables. So if you are a sweet and sour chicken fan, try this one the next time you're at the bottom of a ketchup bottle. And no, this is not that weird, because a lot of Chinese restaurants actually use ketchup in their sweet and sour sauce. So give it a shot. Thanks for listening to Her, a production of Beyond the Plate. You can find all the links and handles I mentioned in the show notes. If you liked this, then tap the follow button and tune in for more Her, where I share what I'm seeing, tasting, and loving lately in food and hospitality. And if your friends and family may enjoy it, I hope you'll share it with them. Until next time.